That was just kind of creepy, wasn't it? Huh? Okay, that's the kind of joy we're not talking about. And that's what you would expect in some cases that I thought church would say. Like, oh yeah, that's what they would say. Just do that. So let me ask you, what brings joy? We're going to start right away with just looking at these 3 points. And if you have your program, you can turn it over if you want to take notes. And here's what we're going to start out looking at. Let me ask you this. If I put this up here, God is the most blank being in the universe. What comes to your mind? Maybe powerful, omniscient, holy, magnificent, righteous. But I don't think we always think this. God is the most joyful being in the universe. Is that what comes to your mind? Do you agree with that? Do you disagree with that? Because not all of us see God like that. Some of us see God like this. See, that's God on his computer, and he's about to hit the smite button to get that guy. And some of us feel like that about God. You're shaking your head like, absolutely, that's what I feel like God's like. Don't have fun, don't smile, don't be joyful, because if you do, I'm going to get you. But that's not what God's like. But honestly, for me, I really thought that's probably what God was like. Because my experience going to church, probably the 10 times that I went total growing up, it was not joyful. And one time when we went to church, and whenever our family would go, I felt like the walls were going to cave in or something would happen because our family walked in. And do you guys remember if any of you grew up singing hymns out of your hymnal? And so we were all standing up singing a hymn, and because we didn't go to church very often, we didn't know the hymn. And there is nothing worse than standing in a line of people that don't know the song. And so my brother is standing beside me singing this hymn so bad that it creates this line of laughter down the pew. And so you know how I'm singing and we're all trying not to laugh. And this older woman in front of us, who has this large, high, gray hair, turns around and looks at us and does this. And I looked at her and I thought, that's what God looks like. That woman right there, that's what God, you know, that face of what are you doing? Why are you laughing? And my image of God was that he's not joyful because in my circumstance, I judged the Christians that they were hypocritical, judgmental, fake, and they didn't have any fun. So who would want to go to church? And because that's what I viewed Christians as, I viewed God as being that too. Is that who God is? And so this week, as we were talking and thinking about this and studying, I thought, who has been the greatest example of someone that exhibits joy? Because here is the truth. When we are followers of God, of Jesus Christ, when we surrender our life to him, if he is joyful, if he is the most joyful being, and when you look at the universe of creation, you have to sit there and think, wow, look at this splendor. This God must be amazing. And as we commit our lives to him, he tells us that we become like him. And what was he like? He was like a magnet. Who have you seen that reflects and is a magnet of joy? And the person I thought of was my husband, Dave Wilson. And so I started thinking back when we first got married and we were in seminary in California. I thought this became a pattern of our lives. Dave was 24 and he had befriended a neighbor who was 16. And they started talking, hanging it out a little bit. Dave worked out with him a little bit. And suddenly this became a habit that Drew would come to the door, knock on it and say, hey, can Dave hang out? I'm like, sure, honey, your friend is here. And then Drew would come with a couple more guys. And they were so attracted to him. He didn't talk about Jesus or anything right away, but they thought Dave was just fun, cool. They related to him. And later on, this Drew gave his life to Christ because Dave was a magnet of joy. When we moved to Michigan, we had kids. And one of the things I noticed was Dave loved to play outside with our sons. So he'd be outside in the front yard with our three boys, and they were all little, and they'd be playing football and capture the flag and roller street hockey, all these games, and we'd have the squirt guns out. And I noticed that as he was playing and laughing and the kids were laughing, the neighbor kids started coming over, and they'd bring their friends over. And so then the same thing would happen. CJ would walk in the house and say, "Hey, Dad, everybody wants to know if you can come out and play too." And here's Dave, the only man, with all these kids. "Mr. Wilson!" It was like Dennis the Menzer. "Mr. Wilson!" And I tell you, this one time I walked out here, and here is the perfect picture of Dave Wilson. He's on one end of the yard, and he's got this Detroit Lions plastic Halloween helmet, football helmet, on his head. It comes down to about here. He looks like the biggest dork in the universe. He has his football in his hand. He says, "Okay, it's me against you. Try to tackle me." So I'm not kidding. Probably 10 to 15 kids from 3 to 10 are hanging on him, grabbing him, and he's running, you know, he's so funny, and then he falls down. I thought that he is a magnet. These kids love him. And it's never stopped. You know, we were in Miami a couple years ago, and it was an evening, it was about 10 o'clock, and we were on the water, and you know how they have shops, and they had this concert going of this band. They're doing this hard rock classic stuff, which Dave loves, and we're there with some friends. And the amazing thing is the band is playing, and there's kind of a stage, and all these people are watching in the bleachers and around. But the funniest part was that these people were dancing. You guys, they were so drunk. They could not even stand up, and there's just like four of them dancing. And this one woman, this is hard rock music, is doing this interpretive dance. You know, it's like... And then, here is the greatest part. Here's this guy over here playing the air guitar. I mean, we were like, look at this dude. He must have been so high. But he is just like, he's like pretending he's in the band. The band guys are back here, and he's just doing the thing, you know, like, And so Dave's like, "That is funny. I'm going to go down there." And before I know it, somebody says, "Look at Wilson. He is down on the stage with the dude doing the air guitar, and Dave's beside him doing his own version of his air guitar." So here's my husband, who is just like, and the guy who's so wasted looks, he opens his eyes, is like, "Dude." And Dave pretends that he has his air guitar with his, and Dave puts his head near this guy's head, and they're just like rocking out on their fake guitars. And I have to tell you, I looked at him in that moment, and there are times I am so filled with being proud that I'm his wife. When he speaks here, I think, I am so proud to be his wife. At that moment, I'm going to tell you, that was one of the most proud moments of my life. I just looked at him and thought, I love that guy. I would never have the security to do that, because I would just never put myself into that humiliating position. He could care less. And I thought, he is like Jesus in terms of not judging this guy, just going down there, entering his world, playing his air guitar. And I think he does that with everybody. He doesn't judge them. He enters their world, and he reflects. Not only does he reflect, he shows Jesus to people. And I've been around a lot of people that are just genuinely nice people. So maybe you're thinking, you know, he's probably just a really nice guy anyway. No. I knew him before he surrendered his life to Jesus Christ. The only time that he would be silly like that or just do crazy things is if he was drunk at a party. And when he wasn't like that, he was acting like Joe Cool, being so cool and arrogant that I did not want to even be around him. When I told my dad, after Dave had given his life to Christ, when I told my dad that Dave Wilson had asked me out, he said, "There is no way you're going out with that guy," because his reputation was so bad. And so I see that Dave's joy isn't from himself. It is from God. It is because of the relationship that he's established, and it exudes from inside of him, and it comes out. In fact, I want to look at a couple verses that talk about that a little bit. In John 17, we're going to look at this verse 13. Now, what's happening here is Jesus has just had the Last Supper, the last Passover meal with his disciples. Do you remember that? And in these verses, in chapters 14 through 17, he begins teaching them all this stuff because this is one of his last times he will be with them. And so he's instructing them. And then in chapter 17, the whole chapter is a prayer to God about the disciples. And so look at this. John's praying to God and he says, I am coming to you, God, now. But I say these things while I'm still in the world so that they, my disciples, may have the full measure of my joy within them. His goal was that we would have his joy within us. And then it says in John 15, 11, he's just been telling them, instructing them. He was saying, I am this vine and you're the branches. If you abide in me, I am the vine and you're the branch. And if you connect with me, you'll bear fruit. If you stay connected with me. And then he goes on in verse 11, he says, I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. That is the source of our joy. And when I was reading this week, I was looking up in my Amplified Bible the scripture and what it says below, because it gives a little bit of an explanation below it. And in John 17, 13, it kind of defines it. It says, joy is a common theme in Christ's teaching. Did you know that? You always think, you know, that I always used to think that Jesus would say, don't do this, don't do that. Joy was a common theme. He wants us to be joyful. And the key to immeasurable joy is living, listen to this, in intimate contact with Christ, who is the source of all joy. When we do, we will experience God's special care and protection and see the victory God brings, even when defeat seems close and certain. So that is where joy comes from. God is a God of joy, and he has created us to be a part of that, and he wants us to experience it. So here's the second thing, okay? It's because I want you to just get that in your head. Joy is at the heart of God. It's at the heart of him. But here's the second thing. Laughter does a body good. Didn't you just see that as we've laughed today? It feels good to laugh, doesn't it? Look at Proverbs 17:22. It says, a joyful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit dries up the bones. And I have some statistics here that says, these are just some medical facts. Did you know that your heart rate goes up and you lose weight when you laugh? Maybe we should just laugh the rest of the service here. That would be good. You burn 78 times as many calories as you would in resting heart rate when you're laughing. 78 times. Dr. Fry from the University of Stanford said that if you laugh for 10 minutes, it's like getting on a rowing machine for 20 minutes. It's incredible the physical effects laughter has on the body. And finally, there's scientific proof that laughter reduces the risk of cardiovascular disease. Did you know that the average 4-year-old laughs 500 times a day? You've probably heard that. Do you know at the average 40-year-old how many times we laugh a day? Guesses? 15. What happened? Why don't we laugh as much anymore? I think it's because we get weighed down with all of our stuff, and yet it has a physical effect, a good effect on our bodies when we laugh. You know, Dave, I was thinking about this week, and I thought, sometimes you also have an inappropriate response to things. And this happened to me 2 years ago. Dave bought this several years back. He bought a 1995, he's talked about it here, Ford Mustang, black convertible. And he bought it on eBay for $7,000. It really wasn't very nice, but he always wanted a Mustang, loved it. And he had had some problems with, like, things happening to it, and he was really meticulous and wanted us to be really careful of it. Well, 2 years ago, it was about this time of year, it was in the spring, it was a Wednesday night, and Dave was getting ready to preach, and so he was studying, getting ready to speak. I wanted to go mow the grass. I love to do that, and we have this tractor, and I was done. It was a beautiful day. I'm pulling up on the driveway, and I see that there are two cars in the driveway. One is this Mustang, and the other one's our van. And I looked at it, and I thought, can I get in between those cars to get into the garage? I thought, okay, it's going to be close, but I can make it. So I'm going real slow, and I hear this noise, and as I look back, I see that there was a screw sticking out of this mower thing back here, and it had gone, and put this scratch about this long on his black Mustang. So now I'm like, oh, no, he's going to kill me. So I start backing up, and I pull the screw up. I pull this whole thing up so the screw's not hitting, and I'm backing up, looking back here, and I hear this boom, and I look, and I knocked off his rear-view mirror of his car. It's just hanging there. So now I'm like, oh, no. So I think I can't tell him before he goes to church. What am I going to do? I'll tell him after church. What am I going to do? And so this brilliant idea that only a woman could have comes to my mind. I run in the house and I get super glue. And I think I'll just super glue it back on temporarily just so he doesn't freak out before church because he has to, you know, communicate God's love and joy. So I'm doing the super glue. It's like, oh, please work, please work, please work. And I'm holding it. It's a really hot day, and I'm holding it on there, and I'm sweating like, oh, he's going to kill me. So I'm thinking, this is never going to work. And I back up. It stays. I'm like, yes. And so I look down, and the super glue had run, like fingers, all the way down the car, like lots of it. And so now I'm like, oh, my gosh. I'm like a 10-year-old. I run in the house, and what do? I get this towel, and I think it'll stick if I just, like, rub it. So I'll get it wet with hot water. You guys, I don't even know why I do this. So I'm really careful, and so I'm just, like, I'm just going real slow, just wiping it down. I'm thinking, okay, that'll, and I look up. What do you think happened? It took all the paint off. Oh, my gosh. I have this stripe of just metal now. So now I've got the scratch, the mirror, and the paint. It started out with a stupid little scratch. So now I'm like, oh, my gosh. I don't even know what to do. So Dave comes down. He says, hey, I'm going to church. Like, okay, honey. See you later. Bye. And I'm just fretting the entire time he's gone. He comes back. It's all done. You know, I've let all this time pass, and it's getting later and later as I'm avoiding to go up to tell him. So I go upstairs and I sit down. You guys, I feel like when I did this, my heart was racing. I was so scared to tell him. And he's really nice. And so I said, something very, very bad happened today. It's always better to prepare like that, right? You know, set the expectation like he's going to freak out. So he said, what happened? I said, something bad happened to something you really love. And he said, did you wreck my guitar? And I said, no, it's your other idol. I mean, it's your other thing. I'm just kidding. So he said, what happened? And I said, oh, honey, it was terrible. I gave him the whole story. I'm on the tractor, and the screw started. It scratched your car so bad. And I started laughing, and I said, on the floor now, laughing so hard, and all the paint came off. And I am crying. I'm laughing so hard. And he said, Ann, this isn't even funny. What are you doing? I said, I don't know. I'm telling you, talk about inappropriate responses. I couldn't help it. I was so nervous. It just, like, came out as the funniest thing I'd ever heard. And all he did was go down and check the car. And I have to tell you, I felt so much better. It felt so good to laugh about it. I was just like so, I thought, well, at least I feel better now. Because it was just so tight. You know, it's just like when stress and strain, it racks your body. And I tell you, I felt good after that. Needless to say, we have sold that car after another really big incident this past year. So it's gone. But isn't that true how laughter makes you feel so good? It's so attractive. It's magnetic. You just want to be around it. Just us laughing, right? It just feels good, doesn't it? Feels so good. And that's what God intended it to do. And here's the last part. Joy is a choice. Now, what do you think of that? Do you think that's true? Because when I first thought of that, I thought, is it a choice? Because I can't control my feelings. Is joy a feeling? I don't think joy is always a feeling. I think that joy, too, is being content in the midst of any circumstances. In fact, when I was, when we were talking about this, Steve Andrews brought up Hebrews 12:2. In Hebrews 11, it's the hall of faith. It's a hall of fame of the people in the Bible that just had this incredible faith. How did they do that? How did they maintain it? And then in Hebrews 12:2, the author says, let's do this. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, who is the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him. Now listen, did you hear that? For the joy that was set before him. What is that joy? What is the joy that was going to be set before him? You know what it was? It was you. And it was me. And it was our redemption. Or a better way to say it was, he wanted to pay the price so that you and I could receive life, joy. And with that in mind, it goes on. He says, who for the joy set before him, what did he do? He endured the cross, scorning its shame, and he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Having that in mind, that I am doing this for these people that I love, knowing that I will be here sitting by my Father, but I am doing it for them so that their joy may be complete. Because Jesus walked the earth. He knows how hard it is. He knew how hard it would be for us. That every day sometimes can seem like pure torture to get through. And yet he died in order that we could have joy. He is the source, not us, not just try harder or be better. It's Christ is the source. And then if you look at Philippians 4:4, Paul is talking here. And he writes to the Philippians, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Where was Paul when he wrote this? In prison. If you read Paul's letters, if you read his writings over and over, he says, rejoice. He's filled with joy, and yet he's been beaten, scourged, stoned, persecuted, shipwrecked. He spent so many years of his life in prison. And yet in prison, guards became Christians because of Paul's joy. Cellmates became Christians because of his joy. Where did the joy come from? Christ. When he sat in prison, he saw Christ and what he had done for him. And sometimes I think we get so caught up in our everyday lives and the stress and the strain and health and jobs that we forget to choose joy, that we forget to reflect on what God has done for us. Each and every day can be a gift. We're taking a lot of the material today from a book that's called The Life You've Always Wanted by John Ortberg. And in the book, John talks about giving his three kids a bath. We've talked about this here before. And his little girl, Mallory, who was young, probably 4 years old, she would do this dance. They called it the Dida Day Dance. And whenever she couldn't contain all of her happiness and joy, she would just run around in circles saying, Dida Day, Dida Day. And they thought it was so cute. But one night, as she got out of the bathtub, John wasn't so patient. And so on this particular occasion, he writes, I was irritated. Mallory, hurry, I prodded. So she did. She began running in circles faster and faster and chanting Dida Day more rapidly. No, Mallory, that's not what I mean. Stop with the Dida Day stuff and get over here so I can dry you off. Hurry. And then she asked a profound question. Why? I had no answer. I had nowhere to go, nothing to do, no meeting to attend, no sermon to write. I was just used to hurrying, so preoccupied with my own little agenda, so trapped in this rut of moving from one task to another, that here was life and here was joy. Here was an invitation to the dance right in front of me, and I was missing it. So I got up, and Mallory and I did the Dida Day dance. And he says later, he says, you know what I've realized is that I tend to divide my minutes into two categories, living and waiting to live. Have you ever done that? Sometimes I find myself not enjoying today because I'm regretting something yesterday. Or I'm not enjoying today because I'm stressing about what's going on tomorrow and all the things that have to be accomplished. And so I forget to celebrate today and live today. I think we all struggle. Just a few months ago, I realized it was in that state. It was like my schedule was stressed, I was tired, and I realized how it was at a peak when, this is so embarrassing, Dave and I were speaking together, and I was just burnt out, and you know, I'm trying to be really into this with him, and he's speaking, and I'm looking at him, and the thought that was going through my mind as he was speaking was, blah, 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 blah. Isn't that awful? I'm so embarrassed to even say that. And he was saying good stuff. It was just like your spirit is just dead and you're burnt out. And it's like, everything just seemed dead. And I got home, I said, okay, I'm in trouble. My soul is just dry. I feel dead. And so then I go through my things like that I go through to keep myself alive and filled with joy. Am I connected with God? Am I spending time with him? Yeah. Have I been with friends? Have I been eating well, sleeping well, exercising? And I thought, I've been doing all that. I'm just burnt out. And sometimes there's not a quick fix, is there? When my sister died, I didn't have joy for a long time. And so I felt like I need to go into nature. I connect with God in nature. And so I went to this old neighborhood where I used to walk all the time. It's my favorite spot to walk. And as I was walking, this is just like last week, on this path, I was had my head down, and I was just kind of griping to God and complaining. This is going on, and this is going on. And I look over here, and there's this big pile of dog poo. And I'm like, oh, that's gross. And I come up, I'm walking further, and then there's this bottle, a beer bottle, that's totally broken. And, you know, then I'm like, look at these stupid kids. And so I'm going through all this stuff, and there's a path that's totally worn from the snow, and there's a big rut in it. And I felt like God was saying, Ann, look up. And I came into this clearing and I looked up and I thought, I've been missing it. The sky is clear blue. All the trees are blooming. The birds are singing. It is unbelievable. But I've had my head down the whole time thinking about the poo and the this and my problems. And I thought, I've missed it because I haven't looked up to reflect of what God's given me today. Breath, life, my health today. This incredible, magnificent creation that he's formed. And so instead of complaining and griping, which is okay to do with God, he doesn't mind that, I decided to switch it up a little bit, and I started praising God for his creation, for the blue sky. And it was amazing to me as I did that. It was like my heart was lifted. And I felt like, oh, thank you, God. I choose joy today. Not always in my head I can, my heart doesn't always go there, but today I choose to reflect on what you've done and to celebrate. This past Easter, Rob Kutron, who sings up here on stage a lot, and his wife Sarah got married on Marco Island. And they got married on the beach as the sun was about to set. And after the wedding, I told Dave, we're going to go to the car. He was talking to some people. I said, I'll meet you at the car. As we were walking to the car, I noticed that there were hundreds of people going to the beach. And I thought, that's really weird. Why is everybody going to the beach now? And they were pulling wagons, strollers, big coolers, tons of people. And Dave came back later. I said, why were all those people there? Did you see the people at the beach? He said, Ann, most amazing thing I've seen in ages. I said, what happened? He said, well, I notice all these people are lined up and they're talking. And I asked this guy, what's going on? He said, oh, you'll see. And Dave said, all the people are talking. And then the sun started to set. You know how it goes into the water? And as it got lower and lower and lower, when it got all the way down to where you couldn't see it, everyone on the beach stood up and clapped. Yeah! And so Dave turned to this older man. He said, what's that? He said, every single night, hundreds of people come down here and give God a standing ovation for the day. And I thought, wow, how cool was that? When was the last time you gave God a standing ovation for what he's done, the good things? And so we're going to end today a little bit different. Well, first of all, we're going to take our offering. And if you're visiting here with us today, please know we're thrilled that you're here.